Hello, you're listening to Law and Borders, the podcast that usually looks at the differences between English laws and those of other jurisdictions. But today we're going to look at global real estate from a slightly different perspective. I'm Jess Harold, and today I'm joined by a frequent visitor to our studio, Alison Hardy, a real estate disputes lawyer at Ashurst and past chair of the Property Litigation Association. Alison, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me here.
So, we're here to discuss your recent launch of Ashurst's Global Real Estate Dispute Resolution Practice. So, can you talk me through the initiative and what that means and what's going to be different?
Sure. Real estate, and certainly real estate dispute resolution, has historically been a very parochial activity. Lots of real estate disputes lawyers would sit there and think, well, what's the point about me knowing about issues internationally? Do I even need to go to MIPIM, for example? Because all I do is stuff in the UK. But it occurred to me that real estate is becoming so much more global. Clients are buying and occupying and developing properties in so many more jurisdictions than they used to. And in those circumstances, they've got to work out what their risk profile looks like. And so if you're a client trying to work out what that risk profile looks like, who do you go to? And historically, law firms have presented real estate disputes as a UK-centric thing, very much England and Wales, in fact. And while they might have stuck the tagline on, and in fact, we did historically stick the tagline on saying, we do global real estate disputes, I couldn't have told you who my partners were in different jurisdictions, who were the specialists. And what I've done is pulled together that team. We've sat down, we've worked out what we know, who we know, what work we've been doing, and pulled that into a document and put that on our website so that our clients can quickly see who it is they should talk to in a different location and see what we've actually done in different countries.
And how does that approach that you've adopted at Ashurst differ from existing offerings in the market? And what is driving this need for this type of resource, in your opinion?
I think the need is driven by this globalisation of real estate. It seems to me that I was sitting there one day thinking, well, hang on a minute, real estate is a global asset. People fall out all over the world. It must be the case that people are doing real estate disputes right across the world. But actually, if you talk to certainly European colleagues, they might well do, for example, real estate and M&A, but they wouldn't think, I'm a real estate disputes lawyer. But actually, they might well have been doing real estate disputes. And by combining the size of the teams that we've got that are real estate dispute specialists in London and in Australia with the specialisms in particular locations across Europe and across the far and Middle East, then we're able to demonstrate an ability to deliver real estate disputes for clients no matter where they're looking to invest.
You mentioned Europe, of course, and it's interesting timing to be launching a global real estate practice and adopting that approach. I mean, do you think it will be particularly important and useful across the European area as we over the next year work out how Brexit's going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it is a complete coincidence, but I think it is the case that people who've invested right across Europe will need to understand how Brexit affects the investments that they've made and what risks they're carrying. So I think it will increasingly be relevant.
Mm. So talk me through a typical example of how one of your clients might benefit from this global real estate dispute resolutions team.
Sure.
A team or A?
Yeah, the A global reader team. It's really catchy. I think if you're a client who's sitting in South Korea or Japan or even in England and Wales thinking, I need to buy property in, say, Spain or Sydney, then you need to understand what those risks are when you're taking those properties, and you need to know who you should talk to. And it seems to me that if you're a client looking to do that, you're probably quite keen to use somebody who you trust in that location rather than just sort of randomly going out into that local market where you may not even speak the local language and trying to work out what those risks are. So that's certainly relevant for people who are going into a market. And when you're in a market and you're in a crisis, somebody needing urgent real estate disputes advice, it's better for them to be able to come to a firm that they know and trust and say, can you help me? And if we can, then that's what we're trying to do.
So perhaps as a bit of a case study, we could maybe apply how it might work in relation to dilapidation, say. You've recently conducted some research among Ashurst's global real estate dispute partners to see how similar repair and dilapidation liabilities are across the world. So what was your starting point?
Well, this is where I first realised how different real estate disputes could be in different places. So the real estate partners and real estate disputes partners get together every 6 months and we sit down and talk about the kind of work that we're doing and who we're working with so that we can work collaboratively. I asked those people on a sort of checklist what kind of disputes they were doing, and a number of times they said to me, "What do you mean?" when I'd use terms that were really familiar in the UK. So I said things like dilapidations and disrepair, and they said, "What?" And so that's a really good example about how dilapidations liability is different in different places. It's not even called dilapidations in lots of places. It's called lease restoration. It might be called make good in Australia or the Far East. It might be called all sorts of things in different places, and lots of places don't have a name for it. It's just breach of contract claim. So it's been really interesting to learn how that works. I've learned things like in Paris, if you take a property in Paris, you've got to have a schedule of condition it by law. In, say, Amsterdam, you take premises in Amsterdam, then the obligation to carry out the repairs doesn't sit with the tenant, it sits with the landlord. And the tenant can serve a notice on the landlord saying you must carry out these works. And if the landlord doesn't do it, they can offset that against the rent. That can make a really big difference to somebody who's looking at capital investments and making sure that they're getting a good return on investment. You can't just buy a property in Amsterdam and leave it alone. You've got to actively manage it. So this research let me understand how real estate risks are allocated and managed in different jurisdictions, and that there's even a completely different lexicon in different places.
It's an area where, in particular, there's a fairly major difference north and south of the England-Scotland border, so I imagine it must vary wildly across the rest of the world.
Very much so.
So what conclusions have you drawn from your research on this?
The conclusions I've drawn are that it's really important to deal with people who have specialist knowledge in specialist locations, but also that there's lots of really big real estate disputes right across the world that need support. And so by working collaboratively together, we can provide specialist knowledge and global support, and we can do very big, complex disputes in those locations. Before I even started looking at this, it would never have occurred to me. And so I think there clearly are things that are going on. We clearly do need to be able to offer this to our clients. And it's really exciting. It's fun doing this work.
And so in relation to a cross-border dispute over like dilapidations or repairs or whatever people might call it, and how would your new service respond to it and advise your client?
So we've recently done this with one of the freeports in the Middle East. I learned as part of this process that there are about 50 free ports, and lots of those are adopting English law, English civil procedure rules, English common law, and in fact calling them dilapidations claims. And in those locations, we might just have one person who is a real estate dispute specialist. But by calling on the wider real estate disputes team based here in London, particularly with cases that are based on English law, we can deliver much better, more effective service, and also potentially 24/7 by pulling the team together right across the world.
And have you found that there's enthusiasm for this with the partners all over the world? Is everyone on board?
Yeah, very much so. We got together at our partners conference in Shanghai a very early morning after a rather late night before, and I was slightly fearful that no one was going to turn up, but a lot of people turned up from teams right across the world, and it was great to see. So I think it's something we're excited about, and we hope our clients will be excited about it too.
And how do you think it's going to change your approach to your job and your working life and that of other partners in your position in other jurisdictions?
I think it makes those of us who've been parochial in the past open our eyes and look up, and it should help our conversations with our clients as well. Those clients are looking at investing in the best jurisdictions in the world, the most important areas for them. And if we can talk to them about what those risks are and how they can manage those risks, then we'll be more relevant for those clients.
Do you expect that other firms will be taking a similar approach?
Yes, I suspect so. I mean, it took me about a year to get all the information together from all of my colleagues across the world. So it might take people a while to gather together all that information, but I suspect there'll be a client requirement for this, and therefore firms will no doubt copy it.
Just in sort of practical terms, I mean, how are you handling communication and time zones and things like that? What's the preferred method of communicating between the jurisdictions?
So as ever these days, it's very much email heavy. We've not yet got to the stage of having team meetings by call, although there are a lot of global meetings that happen across the firm, normally about 8 o'clock in the morning here, so that it's late night in Australia and early morning here. It is difficult across jurisdictions, and so that's why I think it takes time to get this information from people, because the time zones do make it challenging.
And in terms of languages and linguistics, I mean, what approach are you adopting there?
Yeah, well, luckily for us, most of the people in the firm speak fantastic English. but we are looking to make sure that the credentials that we're putting together are translated into local languages, so that clients in local languages can see what we can offer to them. It's very much a great opportunity in that by having people in lots of different places, you can really pull together and offer clients something everywhere, which as one person in a particular location, you couldn't necessarily do. You know, an individual in Madrid might feel more alone if they didn't have the bigger global practice behind them.
And how about in dealing with sort of individual customs and approaches that people might have that differ between countries?
Exactly, and that's why it's so important to have those local experts and not to hold yourself out as doing things in a place where you don't have any expertise. So, you know, we're only offering this in the particular locations where we know we've got the expertise. The worst thing you can do for a client is to mess things up for them by not understanding the local customs.
And do you see real estate dispute work becoming even more global longer term?
I think so, yeah. I don't see clients retrenching. Certainly, I mean, when we were looking at Brexit happening, there's been a huge amount of talk about foreign investors wanting to invest here. And I think if Brexit can be an opportunity for investment from global influences, it can only be an example of the fact that real estate will continue to be globalised, and therefore real estate disputes are automatically going to follow, in my mind.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking about it with us for this special edition of Law and Borders, and best of luck with the launch.
Thank you, Jess.